The Breakfast Club.
Whitey loves reading the SMSs that they come in, so make sure you go and entertain him through the morning as well. I might even sneak across and see what happens with the SMSs that come through. The first one that came through, half! What about the early mail win? I took the place multi into my Divas. The Prez was very, very happy. Well done, Prez. Good start to you. Yeah, Georgie Osmond. Top of the pops for us on the Breakfast Club after that performance yesterday. One man is always top of the pops around here, certainly in my eyes, is Adam Whitey. He's back again. Whitey, good morning.
Good morning. What was the odds of
7:50, 2:30.
That's good.
It's a great start to the week.
Very good.
That's it. We might even be able to afford some scallops at the end of season gala dinner for the Fish and Chippery.
Scallops.
You wouldn't have scallops?
It's potato cakes.
Well, but that's a given, isn't it? The standard fare, we would get flake and we get tato cakes and we get steamed and fried dim sum. We'd have a combination because some people like both.
Correct.
And there would be chips.
Correct.
But because we've got cash left over from George's Excellence yesterday, maybe we can get some scallops for the table.
Potato cakes.
No, but that's a given.
Yeah, but what are scallops? Aren't they potato cakes for the fancy people?
No, 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 no. You're living in an interstate world.
Yeah.
No, no scallops. Well, what's scallops? A little seafood morsel thingy. Mm. What, you've never scalloped?
No, I don't trust that sort of stuff.
Oh. I think we need to spend some time apart.
Well, you know what? We're about to.
I think we need to spend some time apart. This is becoming a concern. No scallops.
No.
You need some scallops in your life. You do. You've got to try this stuff.
No.
You're 44, man.
I'm allergic to it.
You're allergic to it. That's a lie. That's an out-and-out lie.
That's what you say.
I know that's what you say.
You just go allergic to it. Yeah. Intolerant to it. People leave me alone.
That is not cool. Not cool. No, potato cakes are a given. Scallops are different. But they are called scallops in some... WA call potato cake scallops, don't they? Or is it New South Wales?
No, I think it's WA. It's a little bit like that palmer thing.
They do weird things over there.
Yeah.
What are they doing in Perth?
That's a great question, Frank.
We, in our house, both my wife, but also in my former house, my mum, would make good scallop potatoes. Do you know what
they are? Oh, yeah. My mum...
With bacon and cheese and spring onion type setup.
A delicious outcome.
Yeah, very good.
My bride, the world champ, does a good scallop potato too.
Apparently it's time consuming to make it.
Look, there's an order that goes in. Yeah, no, it takes a little bit of time. Yeah, it's a process, yeah. It takes a bit of time, but it's not difficult.
Can you make them?
Well, I could. I think I could. But it seems to be one of the world champs' dishes that she likes to make. So
yeah,
why would I interrupt?
Yeah, 100%. We talk about this a lot at home. You work to your strengths.
No, but I tell you, Georgie Osmond yesterday, he's been very good to us. He's the Kyneton kid. He's the king of Kyneton, is my man, George.
He's been good to us over the journey.
He's the king of Kyneton, and by God, did it win easy. It's going to win more races, that thing, too, just by the way, so we'll see where it all ends up. But he'll be on the head table at the end of season gala dinner. When is that, by the way? Have you put out the invitations?
I don't tend to do that. And then the day before we say, where are we going to go? That's why we end ourselves up in a car park situation. So,
now, did you see any balloons?
Not today.
Why not?
I don't know. I haven't seen many balloons in the sky for a lot of the last 2 years.
Well, it would be a COVID problem.
Why?
Well, because you're very close. You can't spread out in a bucket.
Yeah, true. True. You are
the wicker basket.
The wicker basket.
The wicker basket with the big balloon on top. Mm. It would be a COVID problem, so I understand that. But they were out and about the other day. Yesterday, in fact.
They were.
It's glorious today. There needs to be more balloonage.
The wind is up, though.
Is it?
I think that's got something to do with it. The next couple of days are going to be quite hot.
Basically, the flag's limp.
The next couple of days are meant to be quite hot.
Oh, well, you know what happened yesterday.
You got in the pool.
First pool of the summer. The first swim of the summer.
Very good.
Yeah, it was very, very exciting. Because the last couple of days, we've had a good chance to get the solar going and just to get it up to the appropriate temperature.
Mm.
25 degrees yesterday. And today's going to get it up to about 27.
Mm.
It's going to be very nice. Very nice little pool session. And now that the kids have basically finished school, it pays for itself for the next little while.
Mm. Well, probably doesn't because it costs a bloody fortune, but but it'll pay part of itself for the next little while because they will be living basically in and alongside the pool for the next month or so. So we'll see what happens there. See what happens. But it was good fun yesterday. It was nice. Nice just dangle the feet in and do some work on the laptop with the Wi-Fi. And of course, the kids use all the Wi-Fi, and the Wi-Fi goes out, and you haven't got any access to it. It's a shambles. It's a shambles. Scallops are the greatest thing in the order. Two scallops, two dimmies fried, one fish, minimum chips, perfection, says Jezza off the SMS. Oh, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I reckon that's a pretty good order. That's a pretty good order. I would like to see a potato cake in there, Jezza. I'd like to see one of those, maybe even two if they throw a second one in for free like they sometimes do. But that's not a bad order from Jezza. And you've never scalloped.
Prawns, mussels, calamari. That's from Steve from Glen Iris.
Well, he's asking a question about whether or not you engage in that level of nutrition.
No
seafood at all. No seafood at all.
Just flake. That's all.
So no salmon fillets at home?
No. Do you want to hear my order? One piece of flake, four fried dim sims, a couple of potato cakes, and then chips.
No, but I'm thinking if we're not at the fish and chip shop anymore, we're just having dinner.
Yeah.
And we're going to have some fish.
I just told you. Whole seafood intake is flake. That's all. And that's all it'll ever be.
No prawns.
No. Flake from the fish and chip shop.
No calamari on the grill. Nope. On the barbecue.
Nope.
No fried calamari
no
at the fish and chip shop.
No calamari. That's it.
God, you're boring.
I'm fully aware. And I embrace it, I own it, and I'm very comfortable.
You're always very comfortable. Ah, that is very interesting. I'll tell you who's comfortable at the moment. No, he's not. He's uncomfortable at the moment. Brandon Smith, I reckon. I think Brandon Smith's a bit uncomfortable. We spoke about this yesterday where he, on a podcast, he basically confessed his love for the Sydney Roosters despite having 12 months to play with the Melbourne Storm. Turns out, so we're being told, it's not nothing official from the Melbourne Storm themselves, but so we're being told that they weren't overly enamoured with his performance in that podcast and are considering cutting him.
Right.
12 months out because of their level of anger and frustration about this.
I'd look at that as well, to be honest. I mean, he's an unusual unit anyway, so I guess you've got to factor that in. But
yes.
As I said to you yesterday, I just can't have it that you can... Can you trust a player? Oh, I'm just trying to think of what to say.
You're
got
swallowing.
Fried dim sims on my mind.
swallowing
no, but, you know, have you lost trust for a player that just talks so passionately and emotionally about another team when he's going to play for the Storm?
Well, I think that's the frustration. We did touch on, when we discussed this yesterday, that this does seem to be an extreme case of the NRL movement conversation. I've never heard anyone, not probably haven't paid too much attention because it wasn't a Storm player if it's happened, but talk the way that he spoke on this podcast about this club that he hadn't even agreed to join to this point. But they were told yesterday, the Roosters were told yesterday that Brandon Smith has decided to commit to them from season 2023 and beyond. But the Storm are livid with the conversation and the way it was handled. And then, of course, what he put them through at the end of the season. So there's a whole lot, there's a couple of layers to this conversation. So he does that to the Storm and then goes and talks about the Roosters as if they're the most beautiful thing he's ever seen in his world. And because he spoke about the relationship between player and staff, admin staff, the upstairs, downstairs sort of conversation. So that would have got a lot of people offside too. If I was Matthew Tripp, we should try... Joe, see if you can get Trippy on. Give Matty Tripp a call and just see if he wants to come on. Because that would be an interesting conversation. Because I've never heard anything like it. And I don't know how they do it. I don't know how you sack someone or pull the trigger on this early. Do you release him to the Roosters early? If that works like that, or is he just not play for 12 months? Do you have to pay him if you pull the trigger on that? How's it look?
Yeah, no, I don't know. It's a very unusual situation. I tell you another thing I want to look at, I want to talk about. Is Dustin Martin. Have you seen the photo of Dustin Martin in the paper today? And there's a vision of him sort of circulating over the last couple of days.
I saw him running on the TV last night.
He looks like Glenn Boss.
What do you mean, looks like Glenn Boss?
He looks so thin.
Well, he's lost, what's he lost, 10 kegs. With that,
It was more, it's more than 10, but less than 20.
It wasn't 20. So let's call it 13, just to sort of play it a bit safe. He does look very, very lean. There is a suggestion that it might be able to help him extend his career.
I don't understand how, for someone, now I know that he's a solid unit, or has been a solid unit, but how can an athlete like Dusty lose that much weight? And I'm open for tips on how to get like that.
Well, you need a kidney.
No, I know.
You need kidney, a lacerated kidney to make it happen. And I don't think we won't encourage that.
No, but has he lost muscle, or has he lost, like, how has he done that? Like, he actually looks a very different person.
He does look very lean. I don't know how it all works, I must admit.
Because my tapering hasn't worked particularly well. To the point of nearly crisis time. And I'm just, when I see that, it does make me a bit jealous.
No. It's not how we do this. That's not how we do this. It's not how we see this Dustin Martin situation. He found himself in a very, very concerning environment with that lacerated kidney. That was a very damaging thing. You don't want that.
No, but did he do it because he hasn't been able to train and he's lost his muscle?
Yeah, well, that would be an element of it.
Is he hasn't been able to eat, or has he? Was hospital food not too appetizing, or how has it come to the point that he's lost so much weight?
Well, it would be a combination of all those things. I'm not sure about the hospital food factor, but there would be. I'm sure there'd be an appetite thing, be a difficult thing. I don't know, but I don't think he wants to lose 13 kilos or in between 10 and 20. I don't think that was the plan for Dusty, and I think he'll put a fair bit of that back on through training through the summer. Although it's going to be very balanced and controlled reinsertion into the program, from what we're reading today in the paper, which is fair enough too. Yeah, that won't be the Dustin Martin you see in 2022.
There's a text here that says he's on the fruit diet. The fruit diet, that's an interesting diet, that one, because isn't that full of sugar? I've been told that's not a good one to go on because it's
Natural sugars. That's the second one. There's two people have said he went on a fruit diet.
Maybe he was on the fruit diet. I reckon I could do that, nearly.
You don't like fruit?
No, I like fruit. Absolutely like fruit.
What do you like?
Fruit. Like fruit salad. You know, I like to eat fruit.
All day, every day?
I'm not sure. Anyway.
Is the 5-2 still going?
I told you, it's tapering.
I'm just concerned.
No, I'm very concerned.
I was concerned it wasn't sustainable, and I was abused and assaulted verbally about that.
I'm not as concerned as Emma is about that situation.
Speaking of footballers yesterday, did you see Jack Viney at training? Fair to say he hasn't let himself go.
No.
My God. We've had some crap being played on this station over the years. That might be it, though, Whitey. That might be it. What the hell have you done to my show?
You never heard of this?
Never heard this.
Never.
Never.
This is Peter Coombe. There's another good one about... very nice. Just like to the chorus. It's a good, very good part of the song. You can clean your teeth with orange juice. No, clean your teeth with bubble gum, something with orange juice. Wash your face with orange juice. Have you heard of that one?
Why would anyone do any of those things?
Because it's fun. Children having fun.
You want to put... So your children, you're encouraging your children to wash their face with orange juice.
Yeah, we'll play that one out of the next break.
I'd be surprised if that happens.
Anyway, someone texting toffee apples. So no. Very nice.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
Right.
Can you tell I've got children? What I was going to say is the test match situation is really interesting because Christina Matthews over the weekend talked about how it was getting less and less likely that the test match would be played in Perth. Now, this is coming from the CEO who said a month ago, sort of calm the farm, everyone, we'll definitely be having the test match in Perth. That I reckon that's almost off. And I think one of the things about that is that the obvious thing is to say, well, Hobart gets it.
Yes.
Because they've had test matches before, and they're not. It's been a while since there's been a test match in Perth, and what a great opportunity for Hobart to have a test match, an Ashes test match that they would never have had before.
Yep.
But I do think it'll end up being Melbourne or Sydney, maybe Adelaide as well, but probably more Melbourne and Sydney, and they'll play it as a day-night test match, because one thing that I think Channel 7, Fox, and even Cricket Australia would want was having more test matches in prime time. The thing about the Perth test is that it finishes at 9 o'clock at night, so it's perfect for prime time. So that last session is in really, you know, prime time, massive television audiences, even though it's a day test match. So if they were to replace that, I don't think they would like the idea. This is television. They would like the idea of it being in Hobart where it finishes at 5:30 or 6 o'clock. They'd want that second of five test matches in that prime time. They've got it with Adelaide. They'd like it, I reckon, with a second test as well. So it's not just how many people will get to the MCG for or Sydney for a second test in that environment where they've got, you know, opportunity of big crowds. I think the television thing will also play a big part in it.
Well, I saw Warney fell off his motorbike on the weekend and was talking about this, that he would like to see the fifth test being played at the MCG as a day-night affair. And that seemed to get a bit of support. Michael Vaughan came out in strong support of that, if it wasn't going to be in Perth. So that makes sense from a viewership perspective. Get your eyeballs on the box, so to speak, from the cricket public and the sporting public through the Ashes campaign. And often the fifth test too, and every chance this series as well, there is a null and void sort of test. It's just a spare test, a dead rubber, as we like to say in sport. So if it's a more amenable time for viewership, chances are, regardless of the outcome or the position of the test in the series, it'll still get excellent coverage and excellent viewership.
Yeah, exactly right. So, and there's always that balance between what's best for cricket, what's best for as many people to actually go and watch the cricket, and then there's also that, obviously, the layer of television. And we still don't know half this summer how many people will actually go to the cricket and how many people will be scared off because of COVID and all these sorts of things and prefer the sanctuary of watching at home. And,
yep,
you know, we were talking about this here in Melbourne before COVID took over in the 21 AFL season, that there just wasn't the same amounts of people going to the football. And we were sort of debating through that time, is it because the football's unattractive? Is it because people are scared to get on a train and go to the football, or, you know, catch it in the crowd, which ultimately happened. And then we had no crowds at all because we had no games at all.
No, that's fair. That's fair. We'll see. We'll see what happens with that. But it is a conversation and a call that's been made by, well, certainly a couple of people have a view of that fifth test being a day-night affair in Sydney or the MCG. Now, Tassie, do you think at this stage, as it sits right now, Tassie will get the test if Perth don't have it?
I don't think so, no.
Right.
And I don't think it's a question of whether they deserve it or not. Of course they deserve it, because they've got a Sheffield Shield team. They've always had Tasmanians in the team, or, you know, around the mark. There's lots of them. You know, we're talking about obviously Tim Payne, but, you know, we can go through and mention many players. But I think it is a bit of the reality of it being a commercial decision as well.
Yeah, it's an Ashes campaign.
Yeah,
it's where they make their cash.
Yeah,
that has to play a part.
And when there are six Test matches in a summer, which does happen from time to time, where teams come and play, you know, three test match series. Next year it's a 3 and a 2, I think. You know, that's when either Tassie or, more in recent times, Canberra's had an opportunity. But there's a text here that says, could you play it at Marvel Stadium? I don't think you can, because with the way that the drop-in wickets are there, I don't think it would last 5 days without, because it's never been done before.
Doesn't mean it can't happen.
No, but I don't think it could happen quickly for this summer.
You know, Josh Inglis.
My hands a lot more in my conversation tonight.
Because there's no balloons. Josh Inglis, you want to have a chat about with him and Alex Carey. He was talking yesterday about his chances of playing in the first test. Let's have a listen to Josh.
I'm either going to be playing an A game or a test match next week. My focus is really clear on my red ball prep. It's not ideal having not played for a while, but that's sort of the way it's been for a couple of years now, just with COVID and that sort of thing. So, I'm really happy with where my game's at the moment.
So that's Josh himself. Shane Warne was speaking yesterday in support of him playing over Alex Carey. Let's have a listen to the King of Spin.
Alex Carey's improved. He's a good gloveman, but I think Inglis has got just a bit extra silky smooth gloves, and especially someone like Nathan Lyon at the Gabba, keeping up to the stumps, I think is really important too. So I'd get Josh Inglis would get my nod.
So Josh Inglis for Warney, who's been on him for a little while now. And now, if we go through first-class career numbers, as they are outlined today in the News Limited Press, Josh has played 45 first-class matches, 2,246 runs, a high score of 153, average of 34, dismissals 151. Alex Carey's played the same number of games, matches. He scored 220 more runs, high score of 143, an average of 34.7, so plus 0.7. With 166 dismissals, so plus 15 dismissals over those 45 first-class matches. Eerily similar records, those
it
two.
Is. Yeah, we talked about this yesterday, about just how marginal the difference is. If anything, Josh Inglis is coming with a bit of a rush because of what he did in the last 12 months. And I talked yesterday about the fact he had three first-class centuries just last summer and what he did in white ball cricket, both here and also in the UK. So he's definitely coming in with a bit of a rush. But yeah, I mean, it's just so difficult to know what way that they would go. I just feel that Carey deserves it because he's been that guy that's been sitting in the wings for such a long period of time now and really hasn't done anything wrong, I don't think, to not be that next choice. The question I had for you as a coach, Daniel, is they're not playing that intra-club match because of the weather.
Right.
So should they just be naming the keeper? Because this constant speculation, we're still over a week out from the test match starting. Does it get to a point where they should just name the keeper? Haven't they got enough information to go with the player? So it just makes it easier and more comfortable around the place knowing, rather than having this sort of, you know, constant speculation and then that you know, some will talk up Inglis, some will talk up Carey. I don't know how helpful that is.
Well, maybe it'll make it easier for one of them, not the other one, if they name that team or that position already.
But what can they do between now and then? What can they do between now and the first test? They can't really do anything, so pick them.
But maybe they genuinely don't know and not really sure how to play. Who bats four? Just, I want to digress for a second. I'll come back to that.
Smith.
Who's batting three?
Labuschagne.
Oh, Labuschagne, yeah, you forgot about him. Marnus. So Marnus will bat three instead of, and Hilary Smith will bat four.
Yeah. So then it's Khawaja or Head at five.
And then Green
and
six. And
then Inglis or Carey at seven.
Yep.
So we're looking.
I'm just thinking of left-hander, right?
Yeah, that's right.
This is what I'm doing at the moment.
Yeah, so left-hander, both Khawaja and Head are left-handers. Green's a right-hander.
So
and then
three.
You've got Stark at nine as a left-hander. Everyone, Hazelwood's a left-hander.
I'm just right. Yeah, so the top order, top six. You got three and three. Three lefties, three righties. So I was looking at it from a batting dominant hand perspective. Would you play Carey as a left hander, or do you play Inglis as a right hander to balance things out? But if you got 3-3 the top six, it doesn't really matter. I thought there was more left handers, but maybe they're just the challengers.
Yeah.
Head, Khawaja, Carey.
Yeah.
Three of my left-handers.
See, I'd still like to see Pekowski come back at five.
Well, he hasn't played any cricket.
No, I understand that. But I still think that's where he should bat rather than open. We've got to hope that Harris has a really good summer and he stays there so that when David Warner, whenever it is that he retires, I still think there's a very strong chance Warner will retire after the Ashes, is that Harris keeps his spot and they look at a Henry Hunt sort of player to open the batting with Harris. And then when Pekowski is ready to go, he would come in at five. I still think this idea of putting Pekowski in at the top of the order, I don't think, I mean, he could bat anywhere really, but I'd actually like to see him bat four or five.
We just want to see him bat, really.
That is exactly right.
At some stage, we'd like to see him bat, and hopefully he's okay. Actually, we can talk to Sammy Harper about that a little bit later on. See how he's tracking. We're going to chat to him from the Melbourne Renegades as they get ready to start their summer. From a coaching perspective, how do you manage that conversation? When's the first test? It's a week away. Days away.
Yeah, Wednesday week. Tomorrow
Eight days
week.
Away. Yeah, you'd certainly think about making the call before the end of the week.
Because they're in camp, Daniel. They're in up at the Gold Coast, wherever they are. They'd be eating dinner together, walking through the hallway together. Yeah, how you going, Alex? Yeah, not too bad, Josh. You know, like, I just think it would be...
But that's not going to get any better once the team's announced.
I think it would, wouldn't it?
Because you're still going to have... Oh, one of them's going to go, hey, how are you, Josh? Hey! And Josh's going to go, oh, yeah, I'm going to write the course. So you get a very different dynamic, because one's sitting there top of the world, one's going, oh, I hate your guts.
Yeah.
So you're still going to have a level of awkwardness in either way, announcing the team or not announcing the team. I would wait until the weekend and tell them. Let them fight for a bit. Let them fight for a little bit more. I don't know how they judge it. Hitting them cleaner in the nets, it sounds better off the willow. I don't know how they do it. Or get Nathan Lyon really fizzing the ball and some batters out there in the nets, see if they can handle it a bit better. I don't know how they work it out. But whatever criteria they use, I'd be throwing it at them in the last couple of days and announce it by Friday maybe. Internally.
There's 100 mils of rain forecast in Brisbane over the next 48 hours.
Is there?
Yep. So then the preparation has been ruined.
So it mightn't matter anyway. We're going to get a first test?
Well, I don't know.
Good morning, James.
Morning, Daniel. Dan Lowther, Pump It.
Pump It?
Yeah, Pump It Lowther.
Oh, Pump It, Pump It, yes.
He actually, post his AFL career, spent some time, very good time, at Bell Park Football Club, my local footy club.
He coached the Bell Park, I think.
Yeah, he was involved heavily there. He was fantastic for Bell Park, so yeah, know Dan really well, so looking forward to talking to him. But as you mentioned, the weather is fantastic.
Yes.
Start to get out in the gym and you work on a bit of your TheraBand work, which is those stretchy bands. You get your shoulders all loosened up because we're about to hit backyard cricket season.
Very important.
One of the most important seasons getting around.
Very important.
And also, you know, you start to venture around, you play a bit of beach cricket, you go to people's houses for barbecue, and what you learn is that some people have some very peculiar and different rules when it comes to backyard cricket.
Oh, yes.
And it's my house, my rules sort of thing.
Absolutely.
You can't go bringing your own rules to somebody else's backyard.
Nope. Have you been playing cricket? Have you hit the wickets already this summer?
Yeah, I actually delivered a withering spell. a couple of days ago, just that mate, he's got a bit older. Older kids, he's a bit older than me. But
give me some age of the kids.
He's got a 12-year-old,
okay,
and an 8-year-old boy,
right?
And things like that. And no mercy was shown.
Good.
No, nor should there be.
No.
Chin music.
Oh, sweet chin music.
Did you make contact?
Yeah, absolutely rocked him. Just pushed him back from the stumps a little bit.
Well, hang on, let's go back a step. Is it a tape ball situation? Is it just a regulation tennis ball? Is there
a
lack of band seam?
No, these boys haven't graduated to the tape league.
Righto.
Yeah, they're sort of probably still in C division.
Did you do what Gareth did to my son and suspected fractured cheekbone from a short ball?
He's actually got ice. He's actually got a nice action, Gareth.
He does.
When we played last year's famous Media 11, where you actually starred and where legends were made last year, Whitey.
Is that the day that I hit four sixes off the last four balls to win the game?
That is correct. That is the day.
Was it four?
Yeah.
My word, it was.
Was it three?
It was four.
It was beautiful. You crushed a young man's hopes and dreams of graduating through the ranks very quickly. Had to pick him up out of centre wicket.
He was a bit flat, that fella.
He's still flat. He's not playing again. But it got me thinking, there's some very different rules at people's backyards.
Yes, my word, there are.
And some of the ones that I used to run with, my two good mates, the Johnson brothers, we used to play hours and hours of backyard cricket, and we used to move the bins around, and they were fieldsmen. You could use any backyard furniture.
You had movable targets.
Yeah, you could set your own field, and if you hit it, it was like test match cricket, you know, the game. Yeah. They were like gigantic test match cricket. They became fieldsmen. So you'd have about four bat pads in and everything was short.
Oh, that's cheating.
But we used to get the whippersnipper cord out, and that was the seam. You tape that.
Oh, so we had lack of bands, and you tape that. But the whippersnipper cord is a bit more pronounced, more, what do they call it? A bit more proud seam.
Right. Absolutely, open up some wounds. So you wouldn't be lurching forward onto the front pad too often because it could take some skin. and it'd help push it back because of the driveway that we played on was that, you know, when the concrete gets really shiny.
Oh yeah.
And it's
sheen on it.
Yeah, it's skid through like that. So you'd have the whippersnipper cord as the seam and then a half-tape tenno.
Oh, that's a difficult wicket to be batting on.
And then the other rule,
which
brought a lot of pain, and actually you'd feel the aggressive tension from everyone, was we played a rule three off the pad, you're out. So anything apart from your bat and your hands was counted as a pad.
Right.
So body, things like that. And if you had three of them in an innings, you're out. So if you got to two, there was nothing in your half, or it was just bean balls the whole entire time. Like, the stumps weren't even being aimed at.
That's just nasty stuff.
Yeah, it was
three on the pad, you're out. That's an interesting. I've never come across that concept.
It makes it really interesting. It stops people, plugging the stumps. Covering up all the stumps, or just going forward. You know, there's some dour people who like to just, I'm just going to be here for a long time. I'm not going to play lavish strokes.
Well, that shouldn't happen if you're going to be taping the ball. You shouldn't have too many of those situations, should you?
Yeah, there's people though that they just cover them up French cricket style, and just.
Oh, well, that's unacceptable. Mm. That's when the gin music comes in.
Mm. Beach cricket, if the field is set all to the water side, it's your duty to try and play as many shots to the fielded side. Don't hit it up to the sand dunes. No one wants that. That's a game wrecker. It's poor attitude.
I'll be that guy.
You play offside through the
I'm switching to the open side.
What about you, buddy? Your boy's getting the backyard. Is there some angst? No.
Some angst?
You know what happened on the weekend? There was a mancat situation.
Oh, mancatting.
Campbell mancatted
in real cricket.
In a game.
And how was that feat? I was involved in a mancatting in underage cricket.
Well, he was told if he did it again, he'd sit in the car.
Why? You're cheating. You can't get a head start.
Well, that's exactly what he came back with.
Well, he's right. But it's very simple. You're not allowed to leave.
It's like I'm talking to my son here, Daniel.
I'm not surprised by this.
This is the conversation we had.
If he doesn't cheat, he doesn't have to do it.
Well, that was the response I got from Campbell. Then he proceeded to do it the next ball.
Yeah, well, Campbell's
response was, well, you know, what more do I need to do for him to stay in his crease?
Well, did you quote him the spirit of cricket while he's having to use the spirit of cricket while someone's cheating?
I'm talking to...
This is very much a conversation that you would have with your son. James, you're not helping.
Makes a great point.
Well, we know the rules, and Ravi Ashwin taught us all this recent times. We know the rules, but we're just learning our craft at under 10s, and we just like to have a little bit of leeway, perhaps, when the ball goes off the pitch, you can still hit it sometimes.
Well, as long as Campbell gave him the warning, he said, hey, I shouldn't be having you in front of me as I bowl.
So... So, knocking three stumps out of the ground and celebrating to square leg that he got the wicket through a mancad.
That's excessive.
That's not a warning, Jim.
That's excessive.
That's not a warning.
That's not a warning. My man Campbell, I did my best to defend you.
He sat him down last night. His mother and I sat him down last night and talked about this, taking
again
seriously. Yes, because we had another issue last night.
What happened?
Training.
And then in the backyard.
Ruthless man cat.
He's training them backyard, and then next door neighbour went home because Cam was taking it too seriously.
It wasn't training. It was backyard.
No, it was training. There was an issue of training and then getting home.
Did the neighbour catcher the lalas?
We've got some issues there.
The suki lalas.
Anyway, we talked about how...
Concerned about the coach. The coach is under
enormous pressure. I'm under enormous pressure, Campbell. And so we talked about that he's taking it too seriously and that he may need to step away from the game for a while.
Walk away from the game. Take some personal leave.
Personal leave.
He wasn't happy with that. He said, but cricket's my life.
He didn't say that.
He did. Oh, I told goodness.
You.
He quit football. He quit football to concentrate on his cricket. He's nine. His mum's a bit worried that he hasn't got enough in his life, that it's just cricket.
That's a lot in his life, by the sounds of it.
Well, it seems to be a lot of cricket.
Yeah, passion.
It's just taking it too seriously. We need to sort of take a step back. Did you have that problem?
I was playing every sport under the sun.
Well, this is the thing. Mm. You only play one sport.
Mm. Well, it's his life.
You don't laugh. This is a problem.
It's not my problem. It sort of makes me laugh a little bit.
What about you, Huff?
You've got great duress.
Do you and the bus, is it when you're rolling the arm over in the backyard?
No, my son hates cricket. We never play cricket. I've failed as a father in that regard. It's very disappointing. But as a young fella, Jim, there was no real street cricket.
You and your brothers?
Yeah, two older brothers. There was no real street cricket. We played a little patch of street cricket, but the real battle was in the garage. We had the double garage and...
polished concrete as well.
Mum would park the car on one side. There's a very narrow channel you had to bat in. The back door was 10. You had to get down to find leg for 10. So the entry into the house was 4. On the 4 was 6. But it made a really loud bang. So if you did it, Mum would come out, stop my buddy in the buddy door. So we cop a hiding for that. Everything on the full. The riser bones on the rack were hanging very low. So anything in the air on the leg side was danger. But then we'd move the petrol can for the lawnmower. That was our movable obstruction. Mm. We'd move that into position. David Boone, we called him, leg gully. Yeah.
We had the silver bin called David Booney.
Yeah, David Boone.
He never dropped the catch.
And then we had this big tall lamppost across under through the garage, and about another 15 metres to the edge of the road. Big tall lamppost on the edge of the road, and that was Curtly Ambrose. And you would hit that. And sometimes you would hit this beautiful straight drive because it's the only place you could play a forceful stroke. And Curtly would catch it, hit Curtly on the full, and it would be the most devastating walk back to the sheds you could possibly imagine because you flush this ball. A bit like you on the weekend when you flush that ball back at the bowler and he caught, just happened to find a way to make it stick. When Curtly caught the ball or hit him on the full, it was devastation. Mm. Devastation. But we'd play spin games at the top of the driveway.
Yeah. There's two rules that I always create a great argument is you can't go out first ball. That's garbage. You're out first ball. You're out. You've got to put a price on your wicket. And you can't.
You've got to put a price on your wicket.
Yeah. You can't just go and just. Because otherwise you just try and slog the first ball. You're out first ball. Bad luck. Go down. Go field.
So you'd be surprised to know that Campbell will not play these sorts of rules with. It's pure cricket. You get to get in that properly.
How can it be pure cricket when there's no fielders and there's no open field?
You can't bat them bowl.
If they're not proper people, you can't. He says no gimmicks.
Can't bat them bowl. That's a rule.
Are you listening to this? There's no gimmicks. You said this is your house.
Does he wear whites out in the backyard?
He was last night. Sweatbands. Last night, the whole thing is he got dismissed. He was caught at first slip. And he said, no gimmicks. You've got to get me out properly. It's bowled or it's caught.
Did James bowler. James ask him to remove his sweatbands?
That's a WhatsApp ring. Somebody's ringing me from WhatsApp.
That's a horrendous ringtone, by the way.
Well, it's a WhatsApp one. I don't actually use it. I don't even know what it is.
What's that? It's extraordinary.
Has James asked him to remove the sweatbands? Curtly Ambrose?
Fun games. Fun and games. It's a challenge at the moment being a parent for my children.
It would be. Yeah. It would be.
Have they ever come to blows?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, but the younger one hits the older one. Well, not hits. That's a bit strong.
Just getting sidetracked a little bit, but thinking of that in the backyard. I've got two nephews, identical twins, and we're playing a bit of basketball, and one of them cracked at the other one, and he clocked him. My sister put him in timeout, and the other one waited for him to come out of timeout and then clocked him and then went and sat himself in timeout.
Brilliant.
He just sat there and waited for him while he was in timeout.
Brilliant.
And the second he stepped out of timeout, he just walked up, clocked him, and then goes, all right, I know where to sit.
That's awesome.
My mum and I were sort of going, that's kind of a little bit evil, but we like it.
That is magnificent. Wow. Surely all bins are called Roger, Roger Binney of the SMS. That's probably fair enough too. One man I know about this is Daniel Lowther. He's the new coach of the Geelong AFLW team. He's a bit of a basketball guru as well throughout his junior days. So I know plenty about that. Lowther, good morning.
Morning, Arthur. How are you, mate?
Going very well, mate. Are we moving that way? If players move, are we following players or the basketball style, NBA style, or is it more team-oriented?
It's funny, Pat. I want to talk about more about the NBA from the 80s and 90s. It's definitely moved away from following the team and more the player. I agree.
Dan, Jimmy here. The AFLW, and we've got half in here, that is a competition in its early days where there's been a lot of player movement. How do you finally establish a player, you get them in your system, but yet then you have a high turnover at the end of each year?
Mate, it's just in my early experience here at the coaching level now with the Cats, it's about just how we present to the players what the club can offer and also what the 4 or 5 year plan might be for them. So we've had Georgie Brisparkis come to the club, we've had Dali Friswell and a few of our younger draftees, Gabby Featherston from Apollo Bay. They've all made the move in the first month in Geelong, which is exciting for us, but reassuring that we're doing things the right way. So it's a tricky one. Obviously, there's a bit of high turnover the last few years, but we think that the club and what we're offering is on the right track.
Another one just on that, and we've been talking about it a bit before you came on. Would it be hard to coach someone if you knew in 12 months that they weren't going to be at the club? Do you just not play them? But if they're such a good player, do you just try and run them into the ground, if you will?
yeah, buy beware, you think. Yeah. No, we want to win. So you have to put your best players on the ground to get the best performance. So that will be the approach that we've taken. And we feel that winning is important for us, though, if that means that we play our best players and see that maybe they might head off and hopefully the wins might change their mind or they hang around. But we're pretty happy with the group we've got at the moment, and we're confident that they'll all hang around, which is good.
Now, Cats fans will remember you playing 34 magnificent games for the Cats between 97 and 2001 in Kenny Hinckley's old 29 jumper. And now you're the coach of the women's team. It's been an interesting journey for you, Louth. How are you finding the big seat in the women's game?
Well, it's good, mate. I really enjoyed it. It's been a whirlwind the last 3 or 4 months. It doesn't feel like we've stopped, really. But, just having, one person ask for 5 minutes, but then times up by 50. It does get a bit busy this time of time. But, just being able to have relationships with everybody at the club, from the board, Steve Hocking down to anyone at the club that hangs with us. It's really, I find that really empowering and exciting. But, the last 12 months with you as assistant coach and over the last few years doing some similar roles at the AFL level, you don't quite get to spread your web too far, so this is allowing me to get across the entire club, which is great.
One player I want to ask you about, she came with huge raps, was going to burst on the scene and dominate AFLW, but unfortunately he's had those knee injuries. Nina Morrison, is she going to be right to play, and will she play somewhere different as she eases her way back into it?
Mate, she's flying. She was around July this year, she was good to go, but, wise ahead, just wanted to make sure that she was completely right, but she's been training non-stop for about 3 or 4 months as well. She's a great nick. We had to match him in the weekend, and she showed and just reminded all the younger players and our playing list just how good she is. So, no, she's primed. And we'll, again, just like the question before, Jim, about, we want to win. So if we'll put Nina where she wants to play, as long as she's comfortable with the way she feels and how she's performing, she's in good nick, mate. She's good to go.
Daniel, does it feel like the same club you played at? Obviously, it's Geelong, but it's the women's program versus the men's program. But we talk a lot in this program about culture and how you create it and what it actually feels like. What's it like going back to a club that you played at, but albeit in a different system?
It's actually an interesting question. When I first started, the game was very much semi-professional. So you train late in the afternoon and evening, and you'd have 2 days in between each training session, which is pretty similar to what the girls are experiencing at the moment, being super professional themselves. Although they do come into the club on most days, practically every day, really, because the resources are just fantastic. Now, I can say the resources that Kenya Parker and I play was nothing like what the players have got on hand now. But, it's changed a lot. But, it's only going to get better. The club have got some really magnificent plans for the next 5 to 10 years in regards to expanding training facilities and going down more NFL and the European soccer brand as well. So it's only going to get better for them to play, and hopefully it turns around so they can be more professional and more of the club.
Now, it was a difficult year last year for the Cats. You were an assistant last year, 1-8. You won the last game. I think it might have been interstate, I can't quite remember, but it was a really challenging year. How do you move that around? How do you shift the psyche into being a group that's really positive and energetic going forward? What are you trying to imprint or put into this team with the way you want them to play and the way you want to coach them?
Just by consistency, Dan. I think our players and our supporters at the club just need to have some trust in how we go about it from week to week, and that there's an expectation around standards about what we expect, and That's been a significant change in the way the playing group feel. For me, the new coach coming in, there's significant change right there. Plus, we have 9 new faces on our playing list, so again, a high turnover. So, mixed that with the younger players coming through with some really, really strong draft picks, some good experienced players, new coaching group, and a tweak in our style of play. The energy and the excitement's there, so the change is happening, which is positive.
And for the Cats fans listening, are you an attacking coach? Are you a defensive coach? What sort of style are we going to see for the Cats?
Just be careful here. Daniel's taking notes.
yeah, it was a loaded question. Played it straight, mate. We want to get balanced side, huh? No, we focus. It's no secret. We just found it very difficult for the score last year. So there's been a bit of a harness around our scoring capacity and how sure we're not leaking goals as well. So we do need a balance. So we're trying to make sure that we're covering all bases. Bit of a bland answer, Dan, but we want to make sure that we're consistent, mate.
Sam Harper's not going to the Masters, though, but he's a master of his craft as a wicketkeeper batsman for the Melbourne Renegades. My team in the Big Bash is with us on the line this morning. Good morning, Sammy.
Morning, Harper. Are you sure about that? I'd love to go to the Masters, mate. That'd be brilliant news.
But you're not going to qualify, Sam.
No, of course
Unless,
not.
Of course, you're a better golfer than I thought you were.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I like to think so, but that's not the reality.
So you do play a bit, just not quite exceptional. Is that what you're telling me?
Exactly right, like most of us, I think.
Spot on, certainly very appropriate in this studio. Hey, how are we getting ready for the Big Bash for the Gades? They're my team. David Saker's the new coach in town. What's happening with us?
Yeah, we've got some academy games going on today, Harf. Two of them at the Junction. And then, yeah, hoping to have a practice match against the Hurricanes and definitely one locked in on Friday to start. So, yeah, plenty of games, plenty of net sessions, and, yeah, everything's ramping up really well.
It's a festival of cricket, the Big Bash. It is one of the, as we spoke yesterday about, the soundtracks of summer. Do you get excited at this time of year? It's a very different format, obviously, the Shield and the long forms of the game. But do you get excited about this?
Yeah, I think everyone gets excited this time of year. It's a great tournament that's run, and I think everyone's a little bit more excited this year that we can run it, albeit a bit more normally. So, just going from state to state. And for us, being back at Marvel, I think it'll be huge for us. So, yeah, I think we missed Marvel last year and we're keen to get back there.
Sam, Jimmy Bartel here. Dave Saker takes over the reins. Much change or just trying to do what you guys have been doing but do it better?
Yeah, I think a bit of that. Jimmy, I think as we saw 3 years ago, we went from winning it to bottom of the ladder within a 12-month period, and I don't think too much changed. Internally, it was just sort of a few results didn't go our way. So, stakes would be great. I think the last few years, what we have done is build a really solid group of players. And then all we've done this year is just added in a few guys that are going to really help our squad. So, yeah, I think it's going to be an exciting year for us.
And your role personally, we've seen you open the batting, you know, flicking them over the keeper's head and all that sort of stuff. Is that going to be your role this year again?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think we've got an interesting dilemma in the first couple of games, just with a few of our big boys out potentially. So, we'll have Maka Harvey and Jake Frazen-Girk and a few of us up the top trying to get us off to a flyer and entertain the crowd, hopefully. So, should be good.
Sam, who will captain the team?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll wiggy keep and try and help out whoever it is, maybe. I'd say Navi, but I don't know if he's done English classes the last few years. If his English has come up to scratch, maybe him, but if it hasn't, maybe someone else.
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum because obviously Aaron has stood down as captain and I don't know whether he's going to be playing the first few games as part of a bit of a rest after what he's gone through, but then Nick Maddison's with the Australia A team, who is your new captain, and then, of course, Sean Marsh is injured. So it's a challenging start for you.
Yeah, it is a challenging start. We might take a leaf out of the Australians, but we've got plenty of experience in our fast bowling stocks. And then, obviously, Nabby's had heaps of experience as a captain internationally. And, yeah, whoever it is, I feel like Finchie in the last couple of years, enough of us youngsters have learnt a little bit off him as well. So, but no doubt we'll be excited to get one of Finchie, Soss or Maddo back.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Sam, take us through what you've done in the last week or so, because you've just gone through a block of Shield matches. You kept really well, particularly at the SCG, some outstanding stumpings. But I'm just interested from a batting perspective, because your role changes completely. You become one of the real key batsmen at the top of the order. What are you doing training-wise to change modes?
Yeah, so we flew back from Sydney Thursday or Friday, and then I just played club cricket for Melbourne on Saturday just to get another white ball hit under my belt. And then yeah, I don't know if a surfboard helps with my batting, but Sunday and Monday I actually went down to Torquay and just got a wave and just got away from it for a little bit. And then, yeah, today's really the first day where we ramp up preparations.
So do you just, like, go out there and just smash it or, like, just try and hit sixes? Or do you, like, have you got a process that you go through to sort of get yourself into that different mode?
Yeah, no, there's certainly an element of that. But then I don't know, with Borra today, I'm not playing today. I'll just have a nice, probably hour, 90 minutes in the nets with Andre Borovic, one of our coaches and stakes today, and there's just a whole little range of drills and things I want to work on. Quite specifically, some spin stuff, some sweeping, no doubt practice my ramp in there, and then, yeah, probably finish the session with half an hour or 40 minutes of just competitive stuff where I am looking to hit and sort of get my... I think it is really a goal for a baseball swing for me, so just really get that swing going. Yeah, which is very different to what has been happening the last month.
Neil Wilson, speaking of excellent racing people, in fact, the most important racing people, CEO of the VRC, he's got clothes on, and he's in the studio with us this morning after his run. Welcome, Neil.
Good morning, Daniel. How are you?
I'm going very well, thank you. How far did you go this morning?
Just about seven and a bit. 7Ks and a little bit more.
But, where were they see you floating around? Which parts of Melbourne are you?
Bayside.
Bayside.
It was a beautiful morning, and it was spectacular, actually.
One well, it would have been this morning, yeah.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Nice. And that's a morning ritual every morning for you?
Six out of seven I aim for, yeah.
Which one do you have off?
It depends how what I've done.
There's a tapering program, Whitey. He's got a tapering program.
It's a special treat. It's a special treat.
Well, that's a great effort. Just getting up and doing anything at that level of the morning is impressive. But for a man of your position at the VRC, you've got to be up and about and be sharp every day, I imagine. Does that help? Do you think it helps?
I've done it for a long time. When I was really busy with business and whatever I've been doing, I've always seemed to be able to get up early and go for a run, and it really is the way to start the day in my life. So I look forward to it and enjoy it. And by the time you get in the car or wherever you're heading, you're ready for action.
I'm interested, Neil, the difference between... You were CEO and now chairman. What the time difference on how much time you spend at the VRC and the role change?
It is a bit unusual coming out of the CEO role into the chairman role. But the chairman doesn't have an operational responsibility. It chairs the board and makes sure that we're running the club with the right governance, and we're running and providing support for the management team and providing support for the CEO. So Steve Rossich, who took over in November last year, and I have worked really closely on where those boundaries are, and we have a fantastic working relationship, and the role has changed quite a lot. And I spend on average probably 2 days with the VRC.
Yep.
Obviously, it peaks through high racing periods, through autumn and spring, so I was full-time through the 2 or 3 weeks over the carnival. But outside of that, Steve runs the club, and I chair the board, and we work to make sure that we've got in place the things to take the club forward.
We mentioned the running just before, and it's a chance to clear the head and almost debrief with yourself. We hear AFL coaches, sporting coaches, after they win a premiership and things like that, they enjoy it for 24 hours. The Melbourne Cup Carnival's been and gone. Are you still debriefing the Melbourne Cup Carnival, and what's been your big takeaways from it?
Well, Jim, absolutely. We started on the Monday after finals day working through... what we learned, and obviously some things happened this year that won't happen again, we hope, with limited crowds. But I guess the other really important thing is that our team has been working for about 18 months for a cup week with crowds. A lot of anticipation going in, a lot of nervousness about what would happen and how it would go. And I think we've been really pleased and delighted with the feedback on most measures since the carnival. So the team's up and about and really excited about 2022 and already thinking about how we can make it the biggest and best it's ever been.
Is there much thought with called the racing cards? What races fit where during that carnival?
So we're having a look at a range of things. I mean, Cup Week is the 4 days with the Cup on Tuesday, of course. We're thinking about the last day and how we can build that. We're thinking about going back to Oaks Day pre-COVID when we push that back to a later format and thinking about bringing that back into the frame for consideration. I mean, Derby Day is an all-group racing day, and we want to make sure we keep it at its status and as the best racing day in Australia. So there's a lot to consider racing-wise, and then there's a lot to consider around that when you think about crowds coming back. And we've seen this year, coming out of the carnival this year, we've had a lot of records broken, which is interesting without crowds. We didn't break the record crowd, of course. We had 30,000 people across 4 days, but we broke records around viewership. Actually, an interesting stat is that we're the highest live-streaming Australian sporting event ever. The Cup, and that's something we're very, very proud of, because we've been working over the last 3 or 4 years on building a multitude of platforms to distribute the Carnival and the Cup, and that's both domestically and globally. And we've seen record levels of international engagement with the Cup. We've seen record levels of wagering as well on the back of last year, which was a record as well for Cup Day and Cup, which shows a lot about the momentum in that field. But for us, there's so many other dimensions we look at in terms of viewing, our sponsorship engagement, our member engagement. The club has come out of Cup Week very confident about all of those measures, and the platform hasn't been broken that we feel like we can build now right into 2022 and beyond and take the carnival to a place it hasn't been before.
Does it change your strategy then? Because obviously Melbourne Cup Carnival is great to get to. It's an unbelievable in-person event, and that'll come back. But has it changed your strategy to go further down the viewership path?
It has. We've learnt a lot. For a couple of examples of that. So we had fashions on the field, which we couldn't do for the last 2 years. So we created fashions on your front lawn where people at home send in pictures of themselves in racewear. Going forward, we'd expect to have both. And because that has been an enormous success. We've had so much engagement from people that probably wouldn't have ever come to the races.
Yeah.
That may want to come to the races, but also those that don't come to the races will continue to do that as well. So it's a minor point, but it's an adjustment that we've seen. We've also, this year, seen a number of different ways of putting people together in a way that was COVID safe, that really worked well from an engagement point of view. People have fed back to us, oh, we really like this. We can sit together, be in this area, have the facilities that we want. So I think we'll reimagine a lot of the on-course as well with the feedback we've had this year, but also that on-course side of things the off-course side of things is really important. And this year we introduced Zed Run, the global horse racing digital platform. We've got World Horse Racing, which is our partnership with Ascot, Goodwood, Breeders' Cup, and Hong Kong joined us this year. That's now the number one racing platform on social media globally. So we've got massive distribution going on. So we're really focused on the core, which is the horse, the racing, and then outside of that, we're looking at all of these surround strategies as to how do we make what we do as an event, what we do as a week, what we do as a race, more visible to more people around the world. And it's the numbers are telling us that the world loves sport, and they love the best in the world. And our job is to make sure we keep particularly the Lexus Melbourne Cup number one in terms of Australia's racing product that the world loves.
Charlie Constable from the Gold Coast Suns, new recruit, who's about to be joining us on the line. In fact, he's right there right now. Charlie, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks very much for having me on.
Good on you, pal. Nice to have you with us. Now, you're finally outside the Geelong bubble. People have been talking about you for years, trying to get out and make the most of your career. Is it nice to be finally given that opportunity?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm super excited for the future now and hopefully getting a little bit more experience at the top level and showing what I can do. But in saying that, I've absolutely loved my time at Geelong. Learned a lot off some really good players. And yeah, I think the time's right now to sort of step out and keep developing.
They're a great club, the Cats. Hard to argue that. And I have no doubt you would have learned a heap. But was it a bit frustrating not being able to break in?
Yeah, at times it was definitely frustrating. And yeah, obviously for the last couple of years, I hardly got out there. But yeah, at the same time, they've got a really deep midfield and a really senior midfield that made it a little bit hard to push some players out. But yeah, I certainly learned a lot in my time there and yeah, loved my 4 years.
Charlie, Jimmy Bartel here. Well done on the new club. What was the, just for the half question, what was the constant message you got? Because I was, you know, being a Cats man, I'd watch you, you know, dominate the VFL and I'd wait for you to come in. Was it, you need to learn another position? Is there, what was the message coming from the coaching staff?
Yeah, I think the main message was just the mix of me and a couple of the more senior players wasn't quite right in the midfield, and they thought there was a few too many ball winners, and that's probably what hurt my chances of playing more often. And when that's the feedback, it does make it a little bit challenging to sort of know where to improve to get into the team. And yeah, that was probably the main message for the last sort of 2 or 3 years. And obviously the midfield stayed pretty healthy for the majority of that time.
Was there a consideration to make this move a year earlier?
A little bit, but I was also contracted at the footy club. I think we had a great chat, me and Andrew Mackey, the year before, that if something popped up that helped both the footy club and I, that we'd look at it, but nothing sort of came up in the end. And then, I was really happy to fulfil my contract. And then, felt like a great time for both the club and me to sort of part ways this year and try something different.
And the Gold Coast pitched here, Stewie Jew, and was it, you're coming here, you're going to play inside mid, we're just going to absolutely frank what you do best?
Yeah, I think that was a big part of it, but they certainly talked about a second position as well. I played a lot of halfback in my juniors, so I'm excited to sort of try and add that to my game a little bit and not just being inside mid. But I think, yeah, certainly the main thing will be as an inside mid up there if I can have a good pre-season and play some good early games.
Do you feel different and energised? Do you feel like a bit on edge, you know, starting school again with new group of people, new club, not really knowing your spot in the landscape up there? Is there a bit of an, not uncomfortableness about it, but just a bit of an edge to how you feel at the moment?
A little bit, but I'm also super excited just to get into a new environment, meet some new people, and I guess they don't know me as a person, so it's a good opportunity to, I guess, start over and try and impress and, yeah, show what I can do.
And have you started already? When does it all kick off for you?
No, I'm actually still stuck in Melbourne. The borders are shut.
Oh, of course.
Still, so I can't get up there at the moment, and I think they're not open at this stage until the 17th, so it's looking like I might have to start after Christmas, so just doing an individual program back here at the moment.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.